me prepare you for this lesson, and I'm very sincere in that. I want us to begin a study, and this lesson will, if you will, serve as the beginning. Two or three weeks looking at the leaven of the Pharisees. Jesus said that we need to have a righteousness that exceeds the Pharisees. And he had constant difficulty with the scribes and Pharisees during his ministry. So I want us to look at the basis of the conflict that he had with them today. We're going to look at Luke chapter 11. It's Luke's account of some of the woes that Jesus pronounced against the Pharisees. He pronounced more woes and said more about those circumstances in Matthew 23. This is a shorter version, but the woes that he proclaims against them fits the narrative, I think, that Luke wanted to present. And it fits the narrative that I want us to begin with. The first lesson I taught here several weeks ago now, the difference between legalism and gratitude. And we define legalism at the time as someone who is striving to earn God's merit, to put God in their debt. And that's exactly what the Pharisees were doing, and it's exactly what Luke, the latter part of that chapter, addresses. So we're going to talk about legalism today. And we're going to talk about the leaven of the Pharisees for a couple of weeks, maybe three. Several things that I had never heard presented a few years ago when I put materials together. If you've heard it, great. Maybe I'll stir it up a little different so as to see it and come to appreciate what's being said. But we need to address that today. What legalism is not is a worthwhile beginning as well. Legalism is not about having rules or regulations or high standards. Every book of the Bible speaks to the need to be obedient to God. And so because someone is preaching obedience doesn't make them a legalist. And legalism is not having a high standard because we follow the highest of all standards, Jesus Christ. But as we follow Jesus and acknowledge what he's done on our behalf, and those who are part of the Wednesday night class, we've spent Hebrews 8, 9, and the first half of chapter 10 discussing those concepts in relation also to forgiveness. And we're going to spend one more week on forgiveness today from the book of Philemon in the sermon. And then we're going to leave that behind, if you will. But it's not about having rules or regulations or having high standards. That's not at all what it is. The definition I have found that is the most complete one, it's an attempt to gain favor with God. And that's what I've said with each circumstance. But it's also an effort to impress our fellow man by doing certain things or avoiding some things without regard to the condition of our hearts before God. And that's the key that Luke 11 brings out. We're trying to gain merit with mankind, with other people, and it has nothing to do with who I am on the inside. In other words, it's external. I'm trying to impress you by external things I say and do. And I can be very much in arrears to the teachings of Jesus. But you're impressed with me if that's a goal that I have, external appreciation by other people without regard to the inward man. And of course, that's the person that's going about that pretense. The word used in Jesus in Matthew 23 especially calls them hypocrites. You brood of vipers, you hypocrites. What is a hypocrite? Yeah, do as I say, not as I do. The best definition to let you see it, if you will, is a person who wears a mask. They're hiding who they are. They're wearing a mask. Now, that's not to suggest a pandemic mask. I just realized why you are snickering. If you need to take your mask down for 2 seconds and put it back up, we're not talking about you. But it's someone who presents themselves as something which they are not. And so they're wearing a mask. They're hypocritical, but they're trying to hide it from you, if you will. Whatever it is they're projecting is revealed on the mask. That's the pleasant look. That's the always happy look. That's the kind look. That's the smiling look. When deep down you're harboring strong anger or hatred to someone, you can look different than you are, but again, the inside, you're hiding the inner man. And that's what these verses will help us to address. Think for a second, as I just briefly mentioned some occasions, when Jesus confronted the Pharisees and their legalism. Think of some of these occasions. He was with others on the Sabbath, and he chose to heal on the Sabbath so as to reveal them and hopefully teach, change their way of thought. Everything Jesus did was not to point a finger and condemn. It was to teach them so they perhaps would change. They would be different than they were with his teaching. And remember last week in our lesson, if he only knew who she was or what she was, and he thought it in his heart, and Jesus gave us his name, Simon. Yes, teacher. What did he just do there? Simon, yes, teacher, I'm presenting something that's respectful, reverential. You are the man. But in my heart, I'm thinking this about you. And that's a perfect example of the Pharisees thinking in their heart, and Jesus reveals the person themselves. Simon. And we said a couple of times in our lesson, don't be a Simon. Don't be a Simon. In lieu of today's lesson, don't be a Simon who acts differently than you are on the inside. Change the inside. And let that then be revealed from your words or actions. Simon, I heard or I know what you're thinking. And they were trying to hide it. And I appreciated that in Jesus on that occasion. There were times when they could be very discreet in violating the Pharisaical traditions, if you will. And he talks to them, we'll see it here, about cleaning the inside of the cup as well as the outside. Very meticulous procedures to come into a place where others were. Washing feet, washing hands, washing dishes, if you will. The outer, to look good, not changing the heart. No regard for the heart of the individual. And that's what they were about. Invited to dinner, the hand-washing custom. Jesus was anything but soft or polite to the Pharisees' legalism. Anything but polite. He confronted them in the most proper way, but he did confront them. Let's begin at Luke 11, verse 37. Remember, legalism is trying to gain favor with God based on your works, or favor with humans, fellow humans based on their impression of your external circumstances. Hide your heart. Convince them differently from your actions. Luke 11, verse 37. When Jesus had finished speaking, a Pharisee invited him to eat with him. So he went in and reclined at the table. But the Pharisee, noticing that Jesus did not first wash before the meal, was surprised. Now, do you think Jesus knew what was expected of him in that house of a Pharisee? Was it a surprise to him? That's what we need to understand. He knew what was expected from the Pharisee of him. What did he choose to do? To ignore this man-made requirement so as to say what he's about to say. And the reason he did it is to teach him. And it also exposed him, if you will. So the Pharisee, noticing Jesus did not first wash before the meal, was surprised. And the better way of saying that is he did not ceremonially wash. He did not ceremonially wash. The Lord said to him, "Now then, you Pharisees, clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness." What did the Pharisee want people to see? The ceremonial cleansing. Look at me. Look at what I'm doing. It's pleasing to God. It's pleasing to you, right? And what did Jesus want us to see? And what did he want the Pharisee to see? Tommy?
It's important to understand that this rule that he was violating was not from the Bible, but from oral tradition provided by the Pharisees.
Absolutely.
He was not violating the law at all.
Not at all. And if he was, what would be the case here? What would you say to Jesus that would be absolutely correct? He's a lawbreaker. He could not offer once-for-all sacrifice. So anytime you see a Pharisee, a religious leader of the time, who sat in Moses' seat, Matthew 23 tells us, they were the ones to honor the law and to teach the law and to know the law, but they started adding to it. And they started putting man-made traditions alongside the law, if you will. Matthew 10 talks about Corban, declaring something Corban, devoted to God. The Pharisees who had possessions did not want to use those possessions to take care of mom and dad, even though one of the Ten Commandments, honor your father and your mother. And Jesus called them on that in Matthew 10 and says, you declare Corban, so you ignore a command of God for your man-made teaching. They devoted their things to God, which meant we don't have to use them in my lifetime to take care of mom and dad. It's devoted to God. It can't be used. And it directly broke a command from the law, no question. What do we now see of this Pharisee? What do you see when you look at him? Someone who's trying to be ceremonially correct? What do we see from the words of Jesus? Greed and wickedness. Full of greed and wickedness. I could not say that. You could not see that, could we? Do we know the heart of people? Isn't it easy to trick someone into believing something that's not absolute? Doesn't mean we're terrible, but we present something different than what we truly are to God. And we need to be more like Christ day by day. And that's inside and out. the way we treat people, the way we think about others, all of that's being watched as well. You foolish people do not, and by that, the NIV, you foolish group of people, Pharisees. It's not just the one Pharisee, it's all the Pharisees he seems to be suggesting. We know Saul becoming Paul was part of this very firm, law-abiding people. He says, did not the one who made the outside make the inside? But give what is inside the dish, and the if you look at your alternate rendering in a study Bible, the alternate presentation, but give what is what you have to the poor, and everything will be clean for you. What is greed? That's what he's connecting to especially. Give what is inside. The alternate rendering is give what you have to the poor. And that will help you to overcome this problem of greed. What is greed? How do we best understand it? More, more, more. Yeah, for me. Yeah, give it to me. I want more, more, more. But there's a slight difference to it. I heard a word. Yeah, excess, but there's also a connotation that you not only want something, covetousness, I think that's one of the few times I've ever pronounced it correctly. I've always had a problem with that word, covetousness. It's not only do you want something in your greed, but you want what they have. And that's when you take it to the next level. Wanting is not bad per se, but do you need it? Is it in excess that could be judged by God as greed and covetousness? You're not only wanting more, but you're wanting what they have. John, you had a comment?
Well, it's the same as what you said. It's a selfishness, but it's a selfishness.
Yeah, to take away from someone. I saw another hand, yes? Yeah. Yeah. Now, what's he going to? To go back to our Genesis statement. Why does Jesus so much dislike the sin of legalism? If you've not ever heard it called that, you have to look at what's being told us. Jesus condemns it. Jesus condemns it of trying to put up a front of appealing to God from outside, ignoring the inner. Of appealing to people, trying to hide the inside. What has he said twice and commented on both times? Outside, inside. Outside, inside. We have to acknowledge that who we are on the inside matters. Who we are on the inside is everything to God. Especially if it's contradicting what we're presenting as if that's who we are on the outside. Other comments, questions, or reflections, Ann? Yeah. Yes, and that's a good word. He didn't use that word, but it's certainly talking about the filth that's inside of us. Greed is a filthy sin. The wickedness is a filthy sin, if you will, to let it have an impact. Terry?
Attitude and motivation.
Yeah, your attitude and motivation come into play. I saw it. Okay. Jack? Yeah, and that's the root of selfishness. Selfishness or pride is at the root of most every sin. I think if you think about them, it's at the root of most every sin. Self and what people think and how you'd like to influence that. Inside, outside is clearly in the picture here. Clean the inside as well as the outside. And I say that to segue to his next statement. Verse 42, woe to you Pharisees, because you give a tenth of your mint and a tenth of your rue and a tenth of all other kinds of garden herbs. Now, I repeated it because it applies to each of them. And it lets us see the specificity of the Pharisee. They're going to, as a letter of the law, not just the Spirit, as the letter of the law, the most simple, most, the lowest common cost, if you will, the herbs, is the smallest. And they were very meticulous about giving a tenth of those smallest of things. Of course, tithing was part of the law. A tenth of what they had in the field, a tenth of what they had in their pocket. But even to that degree, but here's what he tells them. He didn't. Well, let me let him tell you. You neglect justice and the love of God. Matthew uses different words. We'll just stay here. You're so meticulous to give a tenth of your mint and your cumin and your rue and all other herbs, but you miss the point totally as neglecting justice and the love of God, which are the weightier matters of the law. These are the big deals. Love your neighbors, you love yourself, and love God. Both of those, both implied in these statements, justice, the way you treat people, the way you treat when you could choose to do differently, show justice to others. Here's what sometimes we miss. Don't know if you have or not, but we tend to. He says this, you should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone. Now, what has he just said? You need to give a tenth of the mint and the dill and the cumin and all other herbs. He wasn't saying, hey, don't do that. That's not important. He says you need to have been doing that, but you also needed to be doing the other. No, don't neglect one. Honor both. Don't neglect the tenth of the smallest of herbs, but you also need to give attention to justice and love of God. Does that make sense? Do we major sometimes on minors and minor on majors? I think I said that correct. That's what he just told us. The minor matters, but certainly the major does. These major, weightier matters of the Christian life. Don't neglect the minor, and certainly honor the major as well. Reflections, comments, confessions, areas that we could apply it. Tommy?
I think we have to be careful sometimes that the church has certain traditions that we should not enforce on other people. Let me give you an example. This happened to a church in Texas. They had communion, and this is before they had the lids to go on top of the communion. They had a sheet that went over the top of it to keep the flies and stuff out of the communion. Eventually, the lids came out, and the people said, no, we need to leave that sheet over the top of that community because it's like a barrier.
Yeah. I can't remember if I mentioned this here. Maybe I did at some point just before we left. But I have a list, and I haven't added to it, but I haven't been around the person who helped me to come to that list. 61 man-made matters that have split churches of Christ. Number 61, you're going to be shocked at this. Number 61, and this was about 8 years ago that I was told that a church split over whether or not to have lights in the parking lot. Now, that is certainly not a scriptural thing. They didn't have electricity then, first of all. They didn't have cars. There's all kinds of reasons, but that doesn't matter. Number 57 is the one I really had not heard when Dr. Jerry Dyer told me, the levers and the lifters. Did I mention that before? When you come to the communion table, do you lift the items before you pray or leave them before you pray? Lift or leave? A church split over that. They believe you should lift them. And others believe, no, it's okay to just leave them on the communion table and pick them up after you pray. A church split over that. Man-made traditions. May I offer a confession? Others, feel free to do the same. When I was younger, I looked at some of the traditions of congregations where I worshiped, and I thought, you know, it would be okay if we had communion after the sermon, or we had four songs before the sermon, just looking at order. Sometimes we as young people, and we was a long time ago, but me as a young person, I would think we need to break the traditions. Let's do it different. And when you do something three or four or five times, what have you now made? Let's all say it out loud. A new tradition. We can rant and rave over traditions, and yet with just a very short time, we've just established another one. Apparently, it's okay to have order and to do things that way. Anyway, we'll go on. Something just went through the back of my mind. I've got to give it a chance to work forward. It's not, so I'll think of it when I get home. Look at verse 43. Woe to you, Pharisees, because you love the most important seats in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces. What did the Pharisees want more than anything from what seems to be told us in the gospel accounts? Like Satan, they wanted to be as popular as Jesus. Satan wanted God's place. He wanted to receive the worship of angels. And God kicked him out, and others went with him. The Pharisees wanted to be noticed. They wanted to be greeted in special ways. They wanted to receive the applause of their fellow men. Now, that's not to suggest that turn it around, they don't care what people think, because influence is part of who we are as well. But they wanted that special applause, that special notice, that special greeting. He tells a story about first will be last, last will be first. Where did he tell them, his disciples, not to go into an assembly and see it? Where were they instructed not to go see it? In the chief seats. Don't sit in the place of honor. But if someone comes and leads you to a place of honor, let it come from them. Don't you demand it. Don't you choose it for yourself. My mom had a way of saying it a little bit different. Gary, if you're doing great things, just be quiet and let others talk about them, not you. And what she's saying is, do great things. Do great things to please the Lord, but don't draw attention to yourself. Let others say those things. Let others think those things. Let others put you in the better seat, if you will. John? Yeah. He would stand up as they would and read Scripture, sit down and comment on it. They had a way to conduct themselves, but it's not to get attention. I'm not sure how you're going to receive what I'm about to tell you, but it's true. I'm just telling you who Terry and I are. I have never introduced myself in a congregation as the minister. I don't ever intend to. I don't intend to. I, like you, am a member of this congregation. We don't do the things we do as ministers only. That we have some responsibilities as the minister or the wife. But I don't introduce myself as the minister when I meet people. I figure at one point they're going to figure it out. When's that going to be? Why is he going up there? Is he the minister? Now, whether they get up and walk out, I can't comment. When we were in Florida, we had a neighbor. We invited her to come, and she did come. And we sat on the fourth or fifth pew, as we do now. And I got up to preach. And she turned over and says, "Is Gary the minister?" Yeah. We didn't want her to come out of guilt. We didn't want her to come because the minister invited her. We wanted her to come on equal ground, just a person coming to worship God. And I'm using a talent that I have. You are ministers too, by the way, in the broader sense perhaps, as you're ministering to others, as you're teaching. That's just what Jesus was saying to them. "Woe to you," verse 44, "because you're like unmarked graves, which men walk over without knowing it." He goes into more detail in Matthew 23. Matthew speaking to the Jew and pulling in things there. They wanted nothing to do with graves. They wanted nothing to do with dead bodies. And they wanted to stay as far away from them as they could. Matthew 23 talks about whitewashed tombs. They would mark them. They would mark them to where clearly you don't want to go there. You don't want to walk there. And he says, "You are like the unmarked graves." And that's an especially pointed statement. People don't have any warning to stay away from you. That's what he seems to be saying. They ought to be warned about you, but you are like unmarked graves to where there's no way to know, and people might come up and be close to you. They might associate with you in some way that knowing you, if you were a marked grave, they would stay as far away as they could. It's a very pointed statement, more so than Matthew's account. But he adds a few things there. Men walk all over without knowing it, something that they wanted or needed to know, to be true to their belief system, if you will. Terry?
If I understand it correctly, to be near a touch of dead body or a grave makes you unclean and you couldn't go to the temple.
Right, yes. It made you ceremonially unclean, and you know you better be washing. You better be ready to wash to get ready. We had a dear couple that we enjoyed spending time with, and we missed them dearly, in Durant, Oklahoma. He had two funeral homes, and we were going to do something one day. He says, I need to run by one of the funeral homes, and it won't take but just a minute. And we went in the back door. No one was there. We started down the hall going back to a back area. He says, oh, by the way, there's a dead body back there. Are you concerned about being around dead bodies? I said, I don't know. I guess I'll find out. We turned the corner, and there was a woman covered with a blanket, and he needed to do something, but he did a little bit toward her. She had been brought in the middle of the night, waiting to be taken care of. I did okay. I apparently did not faint. I'm not sure he knew that. He asked me to warn him if I was going to faint, I guess is what I would say. The Jewish custom is to get that body in the ground before 6 p.m., before sunset. Quick burials in the Jewish community. The Orthodox Jew, even today, I'm told. But that's what he's talking about. You are like an unmarked grave. What would be their response? Verse 45 tells us. It shows us why Jesus was doing what he was doing with his words and actions. He wasn't trying to do it as if to slip something in. He was being very overt to instruct them, if you will, giving them an opportunity to learn, to change. One of the experts in the law answered him, Teacher, when you say these things, you insult us also. And this would be the lawyers, if you will, slightly different than the Pharisees, slightly different than the scribes or the Sadducees. There's several words used to describe basically a common issue in the ministry of Jesus. Well, let me say something to you. It's as if he says, verse 46, and you, experts in the law, woe to you because you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry, and you yourselves will not lift one finger to help them. Now that's a legalist to the extreme, if you will, who wants to make himself look good as if he's doing very well with God's commands, but by his words and actions, he's putting burdens on their shoulders. And what does Jesus say? It's to the extent that they can hardly carry those burdens. You make life more difficult than you have to, is what my dad would have said, probably did. You make Christianity much harder than it is when you add to the commands of God. The commands of God are what? John said in his epistle, not grievous. They're not a burden. Obeying God's commands are not burdensome. They're not grievous. But we can make them more difficult. We can make them more difficult by the things we add to. And in this case, and you do nothing to lift that burden. You do nothing to lift the burden that you have placed on their shoulders. And my dad had a very strong feeling about some things. One of them is sometimes churches do a poor job of scheduling so much that take people away from their families. We could do something every day, couldn't we? The leaders of a congregation. We could do something every morning of every day that could be a good thing. it's dividing the Christian walk to a secular walk and a spiritual walk. And it's suggesting that if we're doing spiritual things, that's great, but that's just secular over there. That's not really spiritual. And that's what the discipling movement did to some extent. You can't go play tennis with anybody unless you're going to invite them to a Bible talk. That makes tennis okay. But it's not okay if you're not going to invite them to your Bible study. Is it spiritual or secular to be a husband to a family or father to a family or an employee at a business? I'm doing that as a Christian. I'm a Christian husband. I'm a Christian father. I'm a Christian grandfather. And to go watch your children perform or compete is not spiritual. If you're there representing the Christian values that you possess and showing them and using them in that, quote, secular place, everything we do is done in the name of Christ to the glory of God. Don't divide secular and spiritual. Don't allow yourself to start doing that. When we went to China, I lost some things. I haven't figured out where, but I think I know why. Before we went to China, we were at the Parkway congregation, and as we were away, we were planning to be in China much longer than 2.5 years, and so I encouraged them to take all the books that they would use in their church library that I had, and they took several, and I'm glad. Somewhere in my library, I had a little quotation, and it was called Rapture. I've got 2 minutes. Rapture. And it was written by a woman who had divided her life into secular and spiritual. And the little poem, if you will, and I don't have it, so I don't remember the last of it, but it's a similar vein of thought. Oh, I wish, Lord, when you come, that I would be involved in important things. I wish I would be at a Bible study. I wish I would be involved in worship. What was she doing? I want to be doing spiritual things when Christ comes back. And there's nothing wrong with doing spiritual things. But as a Christian woman, a Christian mother, a Christian wife, a Christian grandmother or aunt, whatever she did in those roles toward others was also spiritual. I hope I'm being a good husband when Christ comes. It's okay if I'm singing, praying, worshiping, visiting, but I want to be a good husband, a good father, a good grandfather. And we do all of those things as Christians. Don't add burdens, and for sure don't refuse to lift it when you have an opportunity. Thank you.